When the Art Institute of Chicago acquired the sculpture The Faun in 1997, they thought they were getting the work of the French master Paul Gauguin.
Oops, a guy in England named Steve Greenhall forged the thing in his parents' shed.
Oops.
It wasn't the first time. Last month, Greenlaw was sentenced to 4 years in prison for fraud and for forging hundreds of antiques. His parents, who helped him sell the fakes, are also now facing jail time. British authorities say the family had been defrauding art institutions since 1989, and apparently he had quite a skill. Their forgeries range across many periods of history and artistic genres. The family is said to have made over $1.5 million off the sale of an estimated $20 million worth of forged arts and antiques. Let's bring in Ronald Spencer, an art lawyer who specializes in authentication matters. He's also the author of The Expert Versus the Object, Judging Fakes and False Attributions in the Visual Arts. You sound like the right person to talk to, Ronald. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I sound like I might be, yeah.
So the family, they're amazing. They faked works by Thomas Moran, Barbara Hepworth, Otto Dix. So in terms of being someone who makes forgeries, what can a family do right? We're not endorsing this, but I'm curious, what did they do right that they were able to get away with this for almost 20 years?
Well, apparently they did their homework. That is to say, presumably, upon with each of those artists they faked, they found out what pieces were out there, but not in museums and not in public hands, or what pieces were lost, so that they wouldn't fake something that you could go around the corner and see the same thing in the British Museum. So they did their homework to see what was out there. They would presumably do their homework to create a rational, excellent-sounding provenance, provenance being the historic trail from the artist's hand to the present owner. That they would do right. They'd also have to research how the artist worked, what materials he worked with, his style, his method of working, and they'd have to be quite well up on the particular artist and the particular medium that that artist worked in.
I'm curious about the authentication process. How does it begin? How does it work? I mean, are there papers that people need to see, or is it simply about eyeballing the piece of work and looking for certain signature marks or movements?
Eyeballing is the core. All right, we call it connoisseurship.
That's better than eyeballing, I guess.
Okay, but it's that. The three major tools that an expert has to determine authenticity of a work are your eyeballing, connoisseurship, one, two, a study of the provenance, which we talked about a second ago, and three, and lastly, perhaps if it's required, scientific testing, paint, ceramic, quartz, samples, that kind of thing. But the first and foremost tool at the expert's hand is his experience, having looked long and hard at many works by that artist, knowing how the artist worked, knowing the material that the artist used, but chiefly having seen over many years the work of the artist. We all know how we can glance at anything we see from day to day, and we look at it, and we hardly see it, and sometimes then we stop and we look very hard at it. That's the difference between just glancing at it and the expert having looked at it long and hard over many years.
It's like when I'm downtown and I see a fake Chanel bag, I notice the C is a little bit off.
That's right. That's kind of example. If you look long and hard enough at just about anything, if you're into Chanel bags, all right, at first you don't see much. Then you keep on looking. You see how it's stitched together. You see its proportions. You begin to see things. You're educating your eye. All right?
Now, I know you weren't all that shocked when you first read this story.
No, I wasn't because, well, I mean, museums are filled with excellent, most cases, excellent experts. Jim Cuno at the Chicago Art Museum is one of the best directors in the country. But people make mistakes. They get fooled. But they don't get fooled. If you're a real expert and you spend time on it, you don't get fooled that often. So if a museum has 5,000 pieces in its collection, there'll be a couple of fakes in there, but it won't rise to more than a minuscule amount of the whole collection.
We've only got a brief time left, but I don't know if I've seen the Thomas Crown Affair or watched too much CSI, but isn't there science and technology and X-ray vision that can tell you if a painting is for real?
Well, most people think that scientific testing is the ultimate key. The problem, for example, is, let's say, take Rembrandt. Most of the problems of Rembrandt attribution date right from the time that he was painting. So if you check the wood on the frame, you check the canvas he was painting on, you would find that whoever did that was using the same materials from Rembrandt's period. Say, ditto for the paints. All right, there would be no pigments or binding media in there that were anachronistic, as we say. That is to say, came from a later, weren't available in Rembrandt's time. So scientific testing has its place, but there's not many examples where scientific testing is going to be solve the problem.
It's going to be the end all. Ronald Spencer, an art lawyer who specializes in authentication matters, the author of The Expert Versus the Object, Judging Fakes and False Attribution in the Visual Arts. Thanks for explaining it to us, Ronald.
Thank you.